Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Onc Live is also home to the State of the Science Summits. These summits, which take place throughout the United States, are dedicated to the latest research in various therapeutic areas. That brings us to today's episode. We recently traveled to New York City, New York for a State of the Science Summit on breast cancer, where we spoke with Lisa Newman, MD, MPH, FACS, FASCO, Chief of Breast Surgery, Weill Cornell Medical Center, and Assistant Attending Surgeon at New York Presbyterian, and Alan B. Astro, MD, a professor of clinical medicine at Weill Cornell Medicine and chief of hematology and medical oncology at New York Methodist Hospital. In our discussion, Drs. Newman and Astro discussed the need for systemic therapy in women with microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer and more intensive adjuvant therapy in women with intermediate-risk hormone receptor-positive HER2-negative breast cancer. First, we hear from Dr. Newman, who presents a case of a 41-year-old premenopausal woman with a strong family history of breast cancer. On routine screening, the patient was found to have a density in the left breast, with which an initial image-guided core needle biopsy revealed a radial scar lesion. After undergoing a diagnostic surgical biopsy, she was found to have microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer. Listen on to hear the complete case presentation from Dr. Newman and the doctor's recommendations for treatment.
So I thought that I'd discuss a case that came out of my clinical practice just very recently, and this case brings up the discussion of how aggressive we should or need to be in treating triple-negative breast cancer, which of course is a biologically more virulent pattern of breast cancer. But even though we do have a lower threshold for recommending adjuvant chemotherapy for triple-negative breast cancers, we do have pause for thought when it comes to the very small triple-negative breast cancers, the T1A and microinvasive lesions. And that's going to be the topic for this first case. This patient is a 41-year-old premenopausal woman. She's had three children, not interested in any additional childbearing, and she does have a strong family history of breast cancer occurring in her mother and her sister. The patient herself has had panel genetic testing that was negative for any pathogenic mutations, however, so no documented hereditary susceptibility, but certainly a pedigree that was very concerning. On routine screening imaging mammography, she was found to have a density in the left breast for which actually an initial image-guided core needle biopsy revealed a radial scar lesion, and because of its suspicious appearance mammographically, she was referred to me to undergo a diagnostic surgical biopsy. So we performed a seed localization biopsy, and that ended up revealing microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer with high-grade nuclei. Because of this young woman's strong family history, she opted to undergo bilateral nipple-sparing mastectomies with immediate breast reconstruction. Her pathology came back a little bit more extensive in terms of disease in the breast than we were expecting, but it was a still early-stage disease with three foci of microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer and several areas of ductal carcinoma in situ of an extensive nature. So because her foci of invasive disease, even though they were triple-negative phenotype, they were all microinvasive. So when I reviewed the pathology with her postoperatively, I was very pleased that standard of care, at least by NCCN guidelines, would be that she does not warrant treatment with adjuvant chemotherapy. NCCN guidelines do not recommend adjuvant therapy for triple-negative breast cancer up to and including 5 millimeters in size. But as per
can I interrupt you for a second here, Lisa?
Yeah, sure, Alan.
Sure. So my question is, she had microinvasion. She had multiple sites of microinvasion. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. She had three sites of microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Okay,
so it was interesting that when we had our multidisciplinary team review of this patient's case, there was actually a robust and quite energetic conversation regarding the pros and cons of additional treatment for this young woman, both in terms of systemic therapy and in terms of local regional therapy. And so I was actually surprised at how diverse the opinions were. And so I did review a little bit of the literature, which I'm going to review. And then I'm so happy to be able to ask one of my favorite medical oncologists, Dr. Alan Astro, for his opinion as well.
Sure.
So as we discussed already, NCCN guidelines are pretty clear. Adjuvant therapy is not typically recommended for triple negative breast cancer that is node negative and no larger than 5 millimeters in size. But the existing literature do show where there are there's certainly reason to expect that there are diverse practices out there. In a large study, retrospective study that was conducted by the National Comprehensive Cancer Network by Foss Luis et al., they actually evaluated more than 4,000 women in the NCCN series that had T1A and T1B cancers of different phenotypes and that were node negative, and looked at outcomes for these patients. So within that large series, there were 74 triple negative breast cancers that were T1A lesions that did not receive chemotherapy. And they had a 5-year overall survival rate that was pretty good at 94%. There were 25 triple negative breast cancers that were T1A node negative lesions that did receive chemotherapy, and they had a 100% overall survival rate at 5 years. So very small numbers, but this study pointed out two things. One, there is a question of a survival advantage if you do give chemotherapy to small triple negative breast cancers. And secondly, it showed some changes in practice over time in terms of the number of medical oncologists that are giving adjuvant chemotherapy to these small triple negative breast cancers. In 2000 and 2001, 12 of these T1A node negative triple negative breast cancers were included in the study, and none of them received adjuvant chemotherapy, compared to 31% of the 29 cases treated in 2005 and 2006 receiving adjuvant chemotherapy. And in the most recent year of the study, 2009, actually 50% of the 8 T1A node negative triple negative breast cancers received adjuvant chemotherapy. So definitely there are practices that are becoming more aggressive with treatment. But that's, of course, T1A lesions. I was also curious about what we see with microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer. And, of course, the numbers start becoming very, very small, so it's really hard to flesh out any significant practice patterns with a triple-negative microinvasive disease. But there was one study based upon the SEER database published just a couple of years ago looking at microinvasive breast cancer of all different phenotypes, comparing outcomes in 87,000 DCIS cases compared to nearly 9,000 DCIS cases associated with microinvasive disease. And the 10-year cancer-specific mortality for the pure DCIS cases was 1.49%, and it was quadruple that, nearly at 4.08% for the DCIS cases associated with microinvasion. And at 20 years, the cancer-specific mortality for the DCIS cases associated with microinvasion was 9.65%. Now, that was for microinvasive disease of all different phenotypes. We would assume that triple-negative breast cancers might be biologically more aggressive within this data set, but this particular study did not address the outcomes by overall phenotype. So it leaves us in this situation of not having a standard of care to support systemic therapy for microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer. And yet, it clearly is still being offered, and this 41-year-old woman is seriously considering it. She hasn't yet made her final decision. So, Alan, what are your thoughts?
Well, you've reviewed the data beautifully, Lisa, and as you've shown, there really is no clear evidence base telling us exactly what to do. The patient has an excellent prognosis. She has a very small breast cancer, and you're dealing with a territory now of, when you talk about adjuvant treatment, you're talking about small benefit, small risk, and a lack of adequate data to tell us exactly what to do. So what I would do in this instance is I'd go over the slides with the pathologist. I'd want to get a sense of how much microinvasive breast cancer there is. If there was if there were multiple areas of microinvasive breast cancer, that would tip the balance for me to suggest adjuvant chemotherapy. Now, in this instance, you're saying there are three areas of microinvasion. So that doesn't help me that much. Mm-hmm. But I guess if I were speaking with a patient, I think I would say the following, that she has an excellent prognosis, and there is no clear evidence that tells us whether or not she definitively needs adjuvant chemotherapy. I think I would suggest it to her, though. I would say that it's a reasonable option, given that she has three areas of microinvasion of triple-negative breast cancer at age 41. But I would, talk to the patient and see how she feels about that. And if she were inclined not to go with it, I would support her. Is that a helpful way to look at this?
Well, it is very reassuring to me that you have some ambivalence about it. It's certainly not a black and white area. So I'm glad to hear that you did agree that you would discuss the option with her.
I would discuss the option of simply observation, and different patients will have a different threshold for whether or not they want to take chemotherapy or not. And I'd have to leave it at that in this particular case.
Now, the other issue that came up was whether or not this young woman with multifocal and multicentric DCIS and her microinvasive triple-negative breast cancer, whether or not she should consider receiving post-mastectomy radiation. And certainly post-mastectomy radiation by standard of care guidelines would not be indicated in her. However, there were some members of our radiation oncology staff that said that they would at least offer her that option because anecdotally there are some studies demonstrating that multifocality of cancer in a breast after a mastectomy is a risk factor for local recurrence. And I looked at some of the data regarding this issue as well. In the largest meta-analysis that was recently studied just earlier this year involving 20 studies with a 10-year local recurrence rate after mastectomy ranging from 2% to as high as almost 13%, they found a number of features to be predictive of a local recurrence after mastectomy, such as the presence of lymphovascular invasion and positive margins, features that you might expect, but they actually did not find multifocal, multicentric disease to be a risk factor. On the other hand, there was a very nice study published in JAMA Surgery just within the past few months where the investigators were looking at nearly 1,000 women that had undergone nipple-sparing mastectomy, and they did find actually that multifocal or multicentric disease was a risk factor for local recurrence. And they recommended more aggressive local regional therapy being considered in these cases. So we found ourselves in another situation with little data to go on, but reason to open up this difficult conversation and decision with the patient.
Right. So here we are. We're having a patient who's got an excellent prognosis, and now she's already had a mastectomy. And so we have a patient with an excellent prognosis, and now all of a sudden we're talking about adjuvant systemic chemotherapy and post-mastectomy radiation. I'd have to defer to my radiation therapy colleagues. I'd be a little skeptical about offering radiation in this instance, but again, I would have to defer to my radiation therapy colleagues.
Yeah. But certainly, I think everybody would have to agree that post-mastectomy radiation would not be the standard of care for her.
And I'd also have to say that if we go by NCCN guidelines, adjuvant systemic chemotherapy is not the standard of care either.
Yeah, I totally agree. Thanks,
yes,
Alan.
And I would certainly let the patient know that, and the standard of care at this point would be observation.
Yeah. Thank you, I agree.
Next, we hear from Dr. Astro, who presents a case of a 43-year-old premenopausal woman with a 9.5 millimeter grade 2 infiltrating ductal carcinoma. The cancer is estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor positive and HER2 negative. The patient's Ki-67 is 20% and her sentinel node is negative. Listen on to hear the complete case presentation from Dr. Astro and the doctor's approach to treatment.
So now we're going to discuss the case of a 43-year-old woman, premenopausal, with a 9.5 millimeter grade 2 infiltrating ductal cancer, ER/PR positive, HER2 negative. Her Ki-67 was 20%, sentinel node is negative, so she's got a T1B, N0, M0, stage 1A breast cancer, and we sent an Oncotype DX recurrence score, and it came back 23. So the question would be, with how would we treat this patient? What kind of adjuvant therapy would we offer? So the data we have to go on, the evidence base, is the Taylor RX trial, which overall showed no benefit to adjuvant systemic chemotherapy in patients with no negative ER/PR positive breast cancer and an Oncotype DX recurrence score of 25 or less. But then in a subset analysis, they did find that in women under age 50 with an Oncotype recurrence score of between 16 and 25, there might be a small benefit. And most of that benefit was in patients with a recurrence score between 21 and 25 in the range of 4%. So this patient, this young patient, is right in the middle of that higher risk, low risk category, right? She's got a 23. So when I initially discussed options with her, I quoted the data from Taylor RX that she might have a benefit in recurrence-free survival in the range of 4%. However, at the most recent ASCO meeting, Dr. Joe Sperano did an additional analysis of that data, looking specifically at this group of young women with the intermediate risk recurrence score, the women 50 or under. And what his analysis of the data showed was that it appears that most of the benefit in these young women comes from ovarian ablation. So given that this is a small breast cancer to begin with, 9.5 millimeters, and we now have data from the Taylor RX, admittedly it's a reanalysis of the data, but data that suggests that the vast majority of any benefit would come from ovarian suppression. I did not suggest, after actually she went for several opinions, I suggested that she take ovarian suppression plus tamoxifen. And that is currently what the patient is doing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. As you were telling the story of this patient, the concept of how we fit in the results from the SOFT and the TEXT trial demonstrating the value of ovarian suppression and endocrine therapy for these young women. How do we put it into the context of the Taylor X trial? Was wondering about that because we don't have oncogene recurrence scores, 21 gene recurrence scores on the participants of the Taylor X trial, but it certainly seems that we should be able to extrapolate from those data, the SOFT and TEXT trial, to say that ovarian suppression plus endocrine therapy should be quite reasonable in these younger than 50 years of age women with the relatively high end of the intermediate 21 gene recurrence score category. Sure. But it's still one of these areas. It's a little bit of a gray zone.
Yeah. Would it be okay if I just clarified some of the data here? Actually, in women 50 or younger, for women with a recurrence score of 16 to 20, there were 2% fewer distant recurrences. But in those with a recurrence score of 21 to 25, there were 7% fewer recurrences. Although at the time that the Taylor RX was published, there were no survival differences. However, again, when Dr. Sperano looked at that data again, he suggested that most of the benefit in that group of women with a recurrence score between 16 and 25, younger than 50, most of the benefit was in those patients who, most of the benefit would be derived from ovarian suppression rather than from the chemotherapy. So given that this patient has a small breast cancer, that's what I suggested to this patient.
Yeah. And you're actually right about both sets of numbers in terms of survival advantages. The smaller benefit of 2 to 3% is at 5 years, but then the survival difference widens at 9 years, where the endocrine-only patients win that 21 to 25 score range. younger than 50 had about close to 87% survival compared to 93% they did receive chemotherapy as well. So you're right with both categories of numbers. It's just that there's the difference is broader with longer follow-up. But it's a struggle for these patients to go over all of these numbers with them and try to make them understand the magnitude or lack thereof with benefit. It's very tough. It's nice that we at least have additional ways of protecting against some of the toxicities with chemotherapy now, with the scalp cooling programs, protecting against hair loss. That's definitely very reassuring to patients. But nonetheless, chemotherapy is quite difficult for these ladies. Now, Alan, can you summarize for me how you decide which chemotherapy regimen to recommend for patients? And put this in the terms that a surgeon can understand, how you decide between AC, AT, weekly taxane. How do you make those decisions?
Well, there's some data that in the ER positive patient, most of the benefit to using anthracycline would be seen in women who have four positive nodes or more. So in women, certainly in a woman with a small node negative breast cancer, an ER positive, I would suggest adjuvant chemotherapy. I would not suggest an anthracycline. And there is data that TC regimen may be a little bit better than the CMF regimen. It's a little more toxic, but there is some data that shows that it's a little more effective. And so I think if I was going to offer this patient chemotherapy, I'd probably suggest 4 cycles of TC. Although CMF would also be a perfectly appropriate approach. It's a small added benefit of TC compared to CMF in a randomized trial.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now, can you tell me your thoughts on some of the patients? You mentioned that your patient was seeking multiple opinions, and we see a lot of that in New York. There's such an abundance of, you know, wonderful cancer programs here, so it's quite common for our patients to have multiple opinions. And we're also seeing patients that are seeking multiple gene expression profiles to evaluate their cancers in the hopes of finding a score that will support what they are interested in pursuing. And that always makes me feel a little bit uneasy. How would you have handled this patient if she requested that you send off a mammo print for further evaluation of her disease biology?
Well, first, I'll mention that this patient actually received 3 different opinions. So, and they were not, there were differences of opinion. So while I ended up recommending ovarian ablation plus tamoxifen with the support of one outside consultant, there was another outside consultant who recommended systemic chemotherapy here, followed by tamoxifen. So there's no one right approach, and you have to discuss the pros and cons with the patients and the uncertainties in the data set. But yes, women do often seek multiple opinions, and I think it's really a good idea to get more than one opinion. I think there's become a point of diminishing returns if you get too many opinions, because it can become confusing when you find that the doctors may not agree with one another. Now, your other question for me was, what about if this patient had requested another genomic assay? What if this patient had requested a mammo print? Well, I would have advised against that. First, it goes against ASCO guidelines. So ASCO guidelines suggest you use one assay on a patient, and it can be very confusing if you've got 2 different assays. And the mammo print, I have found that to be a useful assay, but it received the ASCO guidelines endorsement for women with high clinical risk. So that would be, you know, 1 to 3 positive nodes or some other high risk features. So MammaPrint does not have the ASCO endorsement for a patient such as this. She would not fit into the high clinical risk subset of patients. So I wouldn't recommend it. Now, if the patient then had it done, what would I do? I would discuss the results with the patient, but I wouldn't recommend it here.
Yeah, I agree. I think it interjects too much confusion if there are multiple gene expression profiles in the mix. And I practice the same as you. I tend to favor mammo print in trying to evaluate the biology of a limited node-positive breast cancer if the patient is ambivalent about accepting chemotherapy on the basis of the node-positive status alone.
Yes, one positive node or perhaps micrometastasis to a node.
Yeah, some of the grade
3 breast cancers. That's the group, the high clinical risk where a mammo print has an ASCO guidelines recommendation.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to Onc Live On Air. Check back on Wednesdays for new interviews from our State of the Science summits. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive and sign up for our e-newsletters. We have several upcoming State of the Science summits for those interested in attending. If you would like to learn about the treatment landscape of melanoma, consider registering for the January 9th State of the Science Summit in New York City, New York. We will also be heading to Charlotte, North Carolina, to host a State of the Science Summit on Multiple Myeloma on January 30th. To check out the list of upcoming meetings or to register, go to onclive.com/meetings/SOSS. Onc Live is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onc Live and Onc Live SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Onc Live and Onc Live State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onc Live page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of Onc Live On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.